Canto 3, chapter 12, text number 4. Is it text 4 or text 4? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Sakam cha sanandam cha sanatanam ahatmabhu sanat kumaram cha munin nishkriyan udvaretasa. In the beginning, Brahma created four great sages named Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar. All of them were unwilling to adopt materialistic activities because they were highly elevated due to their semen flowing upwards. Purport. Although Brahma created the principles of nescience as a matter of necessity for those living entities who were destined to ignorance by the will of the Lord, he was not satisfied in performing such a thankless task. He therefore created four principles of knowledge, Shankhya, or empirical philosophy for the analytical study of material conditions, Yoga, or mysticism for liberation of the pure soul from material bondage, Vairagya, the acceptance of complete detachment from material enjoyment in life to elevate oneself to the highest spiritual understanding, and tapas, or the various kinds of voluntary austerities performed for spiritual perfection. Brahma created the four great sages, Sanaka, Sananda, Sanatana, and Sanat, to entrust them with these four principles of spiritual advancement. And they inaugurated their own spiritual party, or Shampradaya, known as the Kumara Shampradaya, or later on as the Nimbarka Shampradaya, for the advancement of bhakti. All of these great sages became great devotees, but without devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve success in any activity of spiritual value. Text 5. Tanbabashe svabhu putran praja shri jata putraka tannai chan moksha dharmano vasudeva parayanaha. Translation. Brahma spoke to his sons after generating them. My dear sons, he said, now generate progeny. But due to their being attached to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they aimed at liberation and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. Purport. The four sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, declined to become family men, even on the request of their great father, Brahma. Those who are serious about gaining release from material bondage should not be entangled in the false relationship of family bondage. People may ask how the Kumaras could refuse the orders of Brahma, who was their father and above all the creator of the universe. The reply is that one who is Vasudeva Parayana, or seriously engaged in devotional service of the personality of Godhead Vasudeva, need not care for any other obligation. It is enjoined in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 5th chapter, verse 41. Devarshi utapta nrinam pritrinam nakin karo nayam rinicha vachan sarvatmana ya saranam saranyam gato mukundam parihrityakartam. Quote, anyone who has completely given up all worldly relationships and has taken absolute shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives us salvation and who alone is fit to be taken shelter of, is no longer a debtor or a servant of anyone, including the demigods, forefathers, sages, other living entities, relatives, and members of human society. Unquote. Thus, there was nothing wrong in the acts of the Kumaras when they refused their great father's request that they become family men. Om Agyan Timadandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chakshurin Miritam Jainatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Taitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Om Am Hrim Shom Om Farom Tataka Hataka Keshika Jalat Bhadika Lochana Bhadharakanaka Sparsidhya Singha Namostate. Yesterday we spoke of the Lord's facilitating the living entities in either forgetfulness or remembrance. Sarvasya chaham ridhi sanivishto matashvitir ginam apohanam cha. Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita that he is situated within the heart of every living entity, and from him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Now, for those who are inimical to the Supreme Personality of God, yeah, they get the intelligence to forget him. Everyone is dependent upon the Lord, even in their refusal to accept him. The intelligence to forget God is given by the Lord from within the heart. And similarly, those who are aspiring to remember the Lord, they get the intelligence from Krishna. Tesham satada yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam datami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna says to those who constantly serve me with love and devotion, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So for the asura, or the demoniac class of men, Brahma, in his assisting the Lord in the creation, has created forgetfulness through five nascent activities: self-deception, the sense of death, anger, false ownership, the bodily conception, and forgetfulness of one's actual identity. Now, it's stated in these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam that to facilitate the remembrance of the Supreme Lord, Brahma is creating something else. He made one package for the demons, and he's creating another package for the devotees. You can choose your software. It's like you've got a computer. You can work with WordPerfect, you can work with Microsoft, you can work with Windows. Anyway, so you can choose your software, what you want to work with within this material world. For the devotees, he's creating philosophy, control of the mind, control of the senses, and renunciation through Sankhya, Yoga, Vairagya, etc. This is a summary. He's created philosophy, control of the mind, control of the senses, and renunciation. So two packages are available. You can work with self-deception, sense of death, anger, etc., or philosophy, control of the mind, control of the senses. Brahma has created these. Now, this package of remembrance through the principles of yoga and vairagya, etc., he's entrusting to his sons, the four Kumaras. And simultaneously, we see, he's requesting them to generate progeny. Two things. He's giving them this service. He's entrusting with them religious principles, liberation. And simultaneously, he's asking them to engage in progeny. But what's happening? They're refusing. That's what's happening in this second verse. They're refusing to do that. They're refusing. Why? Because the principles of knowledge, which he's entrusted to them, are incompatible with the material activity of progeny, creating progeny. That's why they're refusing. One might question, why are they refusing? We've given them two services which are incompatible. They're not compatible. He's saying take up the process of liberation and increase progeny. So for four little brahmacharis, like the four kumaras, that's a very incompatible instruction. In other words, sense gratification and devotional service don't mix well together. Prabhupada, he used the word ill. He said sense gratification and devotional service, they go ill together. Because one who desires liberation, he must control his senses, not be controlled by them. So Brahma's two instructions are incompatible. So they refused his second instruction over his first. His first instruction, take care of the principles of liberation. His second instruction, engage in progeny. We have to understand what it means for someone to engage in progeny under the direction of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is in charge of creating all the species of life, the innumerable living entities who are born within his cosmic manifestation. That comes under the direction of Brahma. He doesn't do it all himself. He creates certain personalities called prajapatis. And these prajapatis, they engage in this business of sex life. And through their sexual activities, they create progeny within this creation. So there's a big business. This Daksha was one of the progenitors of mankind. He's a prajapati. Daksha. Daksha means very expert at sex. And we see Although Daksha is a great soul, we see how entangled he became. Daksha, it's a whole other chapter. Sacrifice of Daksha. So this sex life is risky business. Therefore, one has to be very cautious. Of course, it can be done. In married life, it can be done, but it's risky. Man is compared to butter, and woman is compared to fire. And in the presence of fire, butter melts. Of course, fire can purify also. Fire is used to purify certain things. But even though it is purifying, still one has to be careful when handling fire. So even in grihastha life, one has to be careful. It's not a license for sense gratification, but it's meant to purify ashram, grihastha ashram. But as far as the four kumaras are concerned, they're not interested. It's not that they want to disobey their father, not at all. Not interested in disobeying their father. What they're not interested in is getting entangled in materialistic activities. So one may question how the son or the disciple can refuse to request of the father, the guru. Actually, that's what they've done. They've refused to follow his instruction. So how can they do that? The answer is that the four kumaras understood the ultimate desire of their father, which was to liberate all the conditioned souls. That is the answer. How is it the four kumaras could be so? They could just disobey the instruction of Lord Brahma, such a great personality. He's the original spiritual master. He's their father. They're disobeying his instructions. How is it possible they could disobey his instructions? Because they understand his higher purpose. What is that? To liberate the conditioned souls. Brahma himself had expressed a dissatisfaction upon creating five nation activities. He had to do it, that's his service, but he expressed dissatisfaction. In fact, he felt impure. So he performed meditation, and by purifying himself through meditation, he again took up the process of creation. In other words, he had a nasty task to create the prison house of material existence. He felt a little contaminated upon having to do that, so therefore he purified himself. Just like we've been asked to go out and liberate all the conditioned souls, to associate with these rascals out there every day. It's a nasty task. It has to be done. We do it, but we know that we cannot do it unless we purify ourselves, unless we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, and follow the four-legged principles and associate with the devotees. We cannot take up that task that the Lord has given to us. Just like he gave Brahma a difficult task, he's also entrusted us with a difficult task. So in order to do his task, Brahma purified himself by meditation. Then he took up the process of creation. But he felt bad about it. He had to create that nescience which would cover the living entities. So he felt bad about it. So he himself expressed dissatisfaction about creating these five nescient activities. So actually, in one sense, they're not disobeying him because they're serving his higher purpose. Lord Brahma is ultimately a devotee. He wants to see everyone liberated. He's a Vaishnava. So they're serving his higher purpose. Their refusal was actually in the interest of their father. Because this is a special pastime. Their refusal to follow the instructions of their father is in the interest of their father. Because they know that ultimately he himself is dissatisfied with this whole business of creating these nation activities. So this is a special pastime, and we cannot imitate such great souls. We ourselves are not in the position to disobey our spiritual master. The idea is that the four kumaras are Vasudeva Purana. They're liberated souls, and they're assisting Brahma in a pastime. That's the point. That's the essence of their right to refuse the instruction of the father. Is because they are already liberated souls and they're assisting Brahma in a pastime. Because we see, as a result of Brahma's anger, what happens? Shiva appears. Lord Shiva appears. Lord Shiva is essential for in the Lord's activities of creation, maintenance, and destruction. And he takes the position of Guna Avatar, or one in charge of that personality in charge of the mode of ignorance. And by his association, so many Bhutas and Pretas and Pishtachas and Rakshasas are delivered. So he's born from the anger of Brahma. Brahma becomes angry. Oh, you're not going to obey my instruction? His eyebrows and his forehead furls like this. And from his anger, Shiva is born from his anger, Rudra. So actually, if he had not got angry, then Shiva would not have been born. So this is a pastime. So they're Vasudeva Parayana, they're liberated souls, and they're assisting Lord Brahma in a pastime. Just like as a result of Arjuna's lamentation, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Same principle. It's not that Arjuna was actually an illusion, but he was put into illusion so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So in that sense, it's a pastime that the four Kumaras are disobeying the instruction. Our position is to follow the instruction of our spiritual master without question. The third offense of the holy name is what? To disobey the instructions of the spiritual master. Actually, the spiritual master's instructions are lifeline to Krishna. Just like I heard when Jayadwaj Maharaj was here, he put an ad in the paper just to get somebody to come to the temple or someone to call up. He put an ad in the paper that, you know, Krishna consciousness will relieve you from stress. So people were calling up, I'm in stress, please help. The lifeline. They have phone numbers like that now. If a person's in great distress or this or that, you can follow up, help, help, and they'll talk to you on the telephone. So in the same way, following the instructions of the spiritual master is our lifeline to Krishna. It's like the umbilical cord. The mother and the child in the womb are connected through the umbilical cord. So Prabhupada compared the instructions of the spiritual master to be like the umbilical cord. It is that which connects us to the spiritual master. If we don't follow the instructions of the spiritual master, what is our connection? It's simply sentiment. It doesn't really mean anything. And we see that people are severed from the connection because they leave Krishna consciousness. And one wonders, how have they left Krishna consciousness? Because they severed the umbilical cord, which means to follow the instructions. Unless you follow the instructions of the spiritual master, there's no meaning to the relationship. Otherwise, it becomes like Christianity. Prabhupada said, don't let this Krishna conscious movement become like Christianity. It's simply sentiment. I'm a Prabhupada disciple. You have to treat me like this and that. But you're not a Prabhupada disciple, or you're not a disciple of anyone, unless you're following the instructions. It's the instructions. Following the instructions seriously that qualifies us actually to be a disciple of anyone, or to be a devotee of the Lord. Otherwise, it becomes like an etiquette, Christian, Hindu, Muslim, Jew, whatever the case may be, like they're doing. So Prabhupada said, don't let it become like Christianity. If we follow the instructions, we're connected. And if we disobey those instructions, well, we're still connected. But if we actually give up following the instructions, then we could actually say in all seriousness, the connection is no longer there. One can no longer expect the mercy of the spiritual master. So it's like an umbilical cord. But unlike the umbilical cord in material life, which is severed at the moment of birth, the cord, the umbilical cord, is connected at the moment of birth in Krishna consciousness. That's the point. In material life, you're connected with your mother in the womb, and as soon as you're born, they sever the umbilical cord. That's where you get your belly button. You get a belly button because they sever the umbilical cord. But the difference is that in Krishna consciousness, the umbilical cord is attached at the moment of initiation. Brahmanda Brahmatikon Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasad Bhahi Bhakti Lata Beej. The nourishment, just like a baby, depends totally on the nourishment of its mother. It cannot exist. A baby cannot exist unless that umbilical cord is there. So the disciple cannot exist unless there's that connection, that umbilical cord, with the spiritual master through following his instructions. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has stated that just as one cannot separate the soul from the body, otherwise there will be death, one cannot separate the instructions of the guru from one's life without there being spiritual death. In this connection, there's one popular story in the villages of India called Andagau Gundaraja. Have you ever heard this? Andagau Gundaraja. It means the village of blind people and the foolish king. I don't know if it's from the Puranas, but it's very popular in India. Andagau Gundaraja. It just illustrates what happens to one who, what position one is put into when he disobeys the instructions of the spiritual master. He cuts himself off from the lifeline of guru by not following his instructions. So once there was a disciple, he wanted to please his guru by giving him one village. So he took him to this village. He said, just see, Guru Maharaj, how nice this village is. I want to give it to you. So the Guru looked at his foolish disciple. He says, this village is under Gau Gandharaja. He said, everyone here is blind. And the king of this village is a fool. He's a crazy man. Gandharaj is a crazy man. So I don't want this village. Yes, Guru Maharaj, take it, please. I will make everything nice. By your mercy, Guru Maharaj, by your mercy. So the Guru goes, you're a foolish disciple. I don't want this village. It's full of blind people. No, by your mercy, it will all become right. You know? So the Guru walks away. You foolish disciple. So the disciple says, I will stay here and I will make everything right for my Guru. So in this village, everyone is blind. No one can see. So the first business of this foolish disciple is he goes around and he goes to all the sweet shops. Everyone is cooking the sweets, but no one can see, so he simply takes them off the shelf and begins to eat them. This is his business. So because he's disobeyed the instruction of his spiritual master, he's lost all his intelligence. So it so happens that two thieves in that village, they decide they want to rob one particular house, like a mud hut or something. So that as the thieves are going into the house, the wall collapses and kills them. So the Gandharaj, the crazy king, he orders an investigation. He sends his crazy soldiers. The crazy king sends his crazy soldiers to investigate how these two thieves have been killed. Of course, they're thieves. He should have just let the matter rest because they're thieves. But because he's crazy, he wants to find someone to hang for killing these two thieves. So the crazy soldiers, they do an investigation, and they see that actually at that time there was one gardener, and he was putting water on the plants, and he happened to put water onto the wall of the house, and it caused the mud wall to collapse and kill the thieves. So they arrest the gardener. You'll be hanged by the neck until dead for killing these two thieves. They're just thieves. I mean, what? No, but it's your fault. The wall collapsed. This is a crazy story because it's a crazy king and a blind village. So the gardener says, no, it wasn't me who did this. He said, it was the Muslim's fault. The Muslim was walking down the road and I was looking at him, and as a result of that, I sprayed water onto the wall and it collapsed. So the crazy soldier said, yes, that seems like a very valid excuse. So they go and they capture the Muslim. So the Muslim is taken to the king's court and he's judged guilty for killing the two thieves. And he'll be hung by the neck until dead. But the problem is when they put the noose around the Muslim's neck, his neck's too thin, it's like this. So they try to hang him, but keeps slipping off. So the Gandharaj, the crazy king, he says, well, now what do I do? Somebody has to hang for this crime of killing these two thieves. So he says, go out and get somebody with a fat neck. So the king's men, they run out, yes, somebody with a fat neck. So who do they find? They find a disciple of that guru who is by the guru's mercy going to liberate this whole village. So he's got a big fat neck because all he's been doing is eating the sweets all day in the villages. So he's got a big fat neck. So they take that disciple and they take him back to the king. And they say, we found someone with a very fat neck. So the king says, you will be hanged tomorrow at sunrise. So at that point, the disciple, he says, begins to realize, what have I done? I've disobeyed my guru's instructions. I've got myself into this situation. Gandharaj, Andagal. This crazy king with this blind people in this village, just see what I've done by disobeying my spiritual master's instructions. So he calls out for his Guru Maharaj. Oh, Guru Maharaj, please save me, save me, save me. So the Guru gets the message that his disciple is about to be hung by his fat neck until dead. So he appears there. He says, yes, I told you. Just see what would happen if you disobey my instructions. So he says, Guru Maharaj, please, I'll never disobey your instructions again. Please, help me out. Get me out of this mess. So the Guru is very intelligent. He's more intelligent than his disciple. So he says, yes, all right, when they take you to the gallows, then you start screaming, please, hang me now. I want to be hanged. Please, hang me. So the disciple goes, but Guru Maharaj, I don't want to be hanged. Just follow my instructions. Yes, Guru Maharaj. And when you are screaming like that you want to be hanged, then I will also come up and I will say, yes, I want to be hanged too. I want to be hanged. And then all the people, because this is a crazy village, they'll also say, yes, we want to be hanged. We want to be hanged. And then we will see what happens. So sure enough, the next morning at sunrise, they take him up to the gallows. You know, they tie your hands behind your back and you walk up the steps. So then he starts screaming, the disciple, yes, please, don't waste a moment. Put the neck around, put the noose around my neck and hang me by the neck until dead. Please, please, I want to be hanged. So the king, he's there witnessing the whole thing because he wants to see what's happening. So he becomes a little bit, what? He wants to be hanged? Well, wait a minute, stop. And all of a sudden some other person appears from the crowd who's actually the guru of the disciple. Yes, yes, I want to be hanged too. Please, hang me by the neck until dead. And all the crazy people in the village, they start coming forward. Yes, yes, we want to be hanged too. We want to be hanged. So the king becomes really bewildered. He approaches the guru. He said, what is this? You all want to be hanged? So the guru said, yes, you don't know. You don't know what you're missing, actually, by not being hanged. You don't know what you're missing. You're the first one hanged, so you can understand how what you're missing. So the king says, yes, 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 I want to be hanged. I want to be hanged. So the crazy soldiers of the crazy king, they put him onto the gallows, and all the crazy people come forward. Yes, hang the king, hang the king. They hang the king dead until he dangles from the rope. So in this way, the guru saved his disciple from being hanged. So like we said the other day, we should not put the guru through such tribulation. It's difficult enough to save the disciple. We'll just speak of 10, 20, 30 disciples. So the disciple should be merciful by following the instructions, not making it more difficult. But this is actually what happens when we disobey. This, of course, is a village story. I'm sure there's other, of course, there's many stories in the revealed scripture, pastimes of how the disciple is saved by the mercy of the guru. But this is a popular story, and it shows the result of disobeying the instructions of the spirit, cutting that umbilical cord. We have to see it like an umbilical cord, just like no woman in her right mind would cut the umbilical cord within the womb. Well, they do that, of course. That's called abortion, but at least in the traditional sense, the Vedic understanding, it would never be done. So similarly, if we disobey the instructions of the spiritual master, we're cutting ourselves off from the nourishment that we need to advance properly in devotional service. Our position is to completely depend upon Guru, not like the Mayavadis. Prabhupada brought this point up several times. The Mayavadis accept a Guru as a matter of practicality. That's all. They accept a Guru as a matter of practicality because their philosophy is that they are God, but now they're an illusion. So they need a guru to overcome the illusion to become God. But after you've realized that you're God, in other words, what do you need a guru for? If you're God, what do you need a guru for? So what they do is they reject their guru at a certain point, actually, the Mayavadis. Because they need a guru up to a certain point. Now they're an illusion, so they accept guru's instructions. Yes, yes, Guru Maharaj, yes, yes, Om Tat Sat. They're offering obeisances. But as soon as they become self-realized, what need is there for... Why does God need a guru? Not in their understanding. God does not need a guru, so therefore they reject their guru. Prabhupada, one time, he was walking with one of his disciples in Mayapur area, and they were walking down a little path. So Prabhupada took the arm of that disciple out of assistance, and they were walking down, and they got to the flat part, and Prabhupada violently rejected the arm of that disciple. He just threw it away like that. So the disciple's feelings were really hurt. Well, my spiritual master has taken my assistance, and then he's rejecting like this. So Prabhupada said this, he did this for a purpose. He said, this is the position of the Mayavadis. And they take the help of their guru to a certain point, and then at one point they reject the guru. They kick him away like this. So this is not our position. Our position is to depend upon Guru, both in illusion and liberation, actually. Our relationship is janme, janme, Prabhu say. It's here, birth after birth, in this material world. But once we attain our liberated position as devotees in the spiritual world, one's relationship with the spiritual master continues on. It continues on. One is always being inspired, one is always being instructed and directed in his relationship with Krishna through the mercy of his spiritual master. How do we understand that? That we go back to the spiritual world? What is need of guru? But Krishna is unlimited. The pastimes in the spiritual world are always unfolding, unfolding, and they're eternal. Radharani never cooks the same preparation twice. Anantashesha never says the same name of Krishna two times. He's always saying a different name of Krishna, indicating that the Lord's transcendental pastimes are always increasing. Ananda Buddhi Bharavanam. So in order to facilitate the Lord's pastimes, to make them sweet and pleasurable for the Lord, we need to be instructed Krishna is unlimited. Doesn't mean he's unlimited, that he's spread out everywhere, he's lost his personality. That's not the meaning of unlimited. Unlimited means he has unlimited transcendental characteristics, unlimited transcendental pastimes, of which his devotees are participating. And one is always taking shelter of his spiritual master in order to facilitate the Lord in those pastimes. We're always the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Even Srimati Radharani, who is the greatest of all devotees, considers herself the servant of the other devotees. That is the understanding. Radharani, she takes more pleasure in engaging others in Krishna's service than she herself engages in service. She's always facilitating. If she can get the other gopis to see Krishna, she'll do that before making the meeting herself, because her pleasure is to see others engage in devotional service. That is the meaning of Sankirtana.
Rejecting the guru, their so-called goal, by rejecting the guru. We attain our goal by acceptance of guru. That's the point. They reject, and they become so-called successful. They become Brahman. But our success is dependent upon how much we take shelter of the spirit. Yatya devi para bhakti, yatya devi tata guru. One who has full faith in the spiritual master in Krishna, the full import of Vedic knowledge is revealed to him. So our process is to understand Krishna through his representative, and to the more we can accept that representative, which means to imbibe his instructions, the closer we come to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why so much emphasis is placed on the relationship with one spiritual master in the process of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna says, one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. But one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he is actually my devotee. And again, Prabhupada said, I do not know who is Krishna. He said, I only know my Guru Maharaj. So it is by the mercy of the spiritual master that we meet Krishna. Yasha Prasad, Bhagavat Prasad, Yasha Prasad, Nakati Gutopi. This is the understanding. But by the mercy of the spiritual master, we're actually able to understand Krishna. And without the mercy of the spiritual master, nothing about Krishna is actually revealed to us. So therefore, there's actually Guru is worshipped in Vedic culture because he's the representative. For the disciples, he's the manifestation of Krishna's mercy, manifest before him. So the poor Kumara's refusal to accept the order of their father is a special incident and is not to be imitated by us. This does not give us an excuse to disobey the instructions of our spiritual master. We are meant to follow the instructions of great souls, not imitate them. We're not meant to imitate them. Just like one time they asked Prabhupada, you say we're not supposed to eat meat, but Jesus ate fish. So Prabhupada could have answered in many ways. He could have said, well, like, you know, we often answer, yes, thank you. You know, meat, actually in the Greek, there's the word nomish, which means nourishment. So actually, he didn't eat meat. He ate nourishment. He distributed nourishment. But Prabhupada didn't take it like that. They said he ate meat, Jesus. The Prabhupada said he can eat the whole world if he wants. He said, your position is to follow his instruction. Great liberated souls, Vasudeva Parayanas, they can do. They're not bound by the rules and regulations. They're liberated souls. They always follow them for our advantage, but we should understand they're not bound to follow. They're liberated souls. So Prabhupada said if he wanted to, he could eat the whole world. He wouldn't become involved in sinful activity. He's the Lord's pure devotee. If the Lord asked him to eat the whole world, he'll eat the whole world. Your position is to follow his instructions. And what is his instructions? Do not kill. Of course, we know that Jesus didn't eat meat. But the point is that we're not meant to imitate great souls. You can't imitate. Prabhupada said if you try to imitate Lord Shiva by smoking Ganga, marijuana, he said, that will bring your death very near. Shiva can do it. That's because he has to do it to, you know, to appear, to attract the ghosts and the hobgoblins, etc. Oh, he's like us. Look at him. He lives in a crematorium. He covers himself with ashes in a crematorium. He's covered with stakes. He smokes. But let us associate with him. Then they associate with him. And by his pure association, they become delivered. But it's not that Lord Shiva is in any way contaminated. He's not affected by smoking the ganga. Not in any way. Prabhupada said, if you want to imitate the behavior of Lord Shiva smoking ganga, then you should also be able to imitate his behavior of drinking hala hala. Hala hala is the poison which came out of the churning of the ocean, of the asuras and the devas. They were churning that ocean with the Mandara mountain on the back of the kurma. And they wanted to get somebody like Singh, so the first thing that came out was hala hala. Hala hala was a thick, foamy poison, very deadly. So no one knew what to do. It's going to cover the entire creation. What to do? So they called upon Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, he came, and because he's so powerful, he could drink that hala hala. Some drop fell from his hand, and that's where all the snakes and the scorpions got their poison. A few drops fell, the cobras, death adders and all those things. They drank that. But then his throat became blue. What is it called? Nilakanta. His throat became blue. But he can do it without being affected. But if you do it, you become affected. So he can do whatever he wants. He can smoke the ganga, whatever. There's a purpose behind that, of course, but he will not be affected. Your position is not to imitate Lord Shiva. Your position is to follow his instructions. So whatever great souls do, we must follow their instructions. So in essence, the essence actually of the four kumaras' actions is to understand that one who has surrendered to Krishna need not care for any other obligation. That's the purport here. That's what Srila Prabhupada is stating. Anyone who has completely given up all worldly relationships and has taken absolute shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives us salvation, and who alone is fit to be taken shelter of, is no longer a debtor or a servant of anyone, including the demigods, forefathers, sages, other living entities, relatives, and members of human society. This is the essence of this stuff. We should not pick and choose in order to facilitate our own sense gratification. Oh yes, I'll disobey the instruction because it's too difficult, I want to do something else. We have to understand the essence. So what is the essence of the disobeying instructions of Lord Brahma? Well, in the beginning we mentioned it was to assist Brahma in his pastime of the creation of Lord Shiva, etc. But another understanding, the disobeying the instruction is to serve the higher purpose, but also to teach us that one who is completely dependent upon the Lord has no other obligation other than his service to the Lord. At the moment we're obligated to our family, to our forefathers, to demigods, we take service from all of them. We take service from our mother and father, we take service from our brothers and sisters, we take service from forefathers, and they've invented things like electricity and these things like that. So we're obligated, demigods, light, the rain, the heat, etc. The one who pleases Krishna, in effect, pleases all living entities because Krishna is the source of everyone's good fortune. Nitya nityanam, chaitana chaitanam, ekabahanam, yovadigati kamam. Out of all eternal living beings, there's eka, there's one, who is fulfilling the desires of everyone. So if we satisfy that eka, that one, automatically everyone else is satisfied. No obligation to them is actually achieved. If we please Krishna, like Prabhupada said, if you water the root of a tree, then automatically the branches, the leaves are all benefited. So if we water the root of creation, in other words, if we serve Krishna, then our obligation to others is fulfilled because we satisfy Krishna. So this is actually what the four kumaras have done by refusing to take up family life, to progenate. They want to be Vasudeva Parayana, they want to be liberated souls. For what purpose? So they can fulfill the Lord's ultimate desire. And the ultimate desire of Brahma, which is to see all living entities become liberated. Why should the four kumaras be concerned with having a family when they see all living entities equally? A family man naturally has affection for his own family members. He's partial. A family man is partial. That's why in Vedic culture there's sannyas. To be an effective preacher, one has to be impartial. One cannot be partial, otherwise how can you preach effectively? You have to be impartial. So a family man, every man is too much attached to his wife. So therefore, at some point in Vedic culture, at some point you have to cut the connection if you actually want to be a full representative of the Lord. Because otherwise, you'll have some Naturally, a father, and naturally a husband, will look after the interests of his wife and his children before anyone else. So in order to sever that, so that we can become acting effective creatures, we can sever that connection completely and develop affection for all living entities. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Ramani Gavi Hasini, Sunitaya Sapakita Pandita Samadarshana. Sannyas is absolutely, it's obligatory actually in Vedic culture. Because any association with man and woman, there's definitely going to be some special reserved affection. So if one has some special affection, then he cannot give his association equally to everyone. So therefore, he cut it. So the four Kumaras, their ultimate obligation is Vasudeva Prayana. They're great devotees of the Lord, and their interest is to see living entities become liberated, not bondage. They don't want to participate in giving birth to bondage. They don't want to facilitate giving birth to bondage. They want to facilitate giving birth to liberation. Janame, janame, sabbe, kutta matapaya, Krishna guru nahimi, bhajariye. Everyone gets mother and father. Janame, janame, sabbe, kutta matapaya. Even these crazy flies in this room are all pervading. They have mothers and fathers. Big deal. But guru Krishna prachara. Whether it's janame, janame, sabbe, kutta matapaya, Krishna guru nahimi, bhajariye. This means everyone gets mother and father. The one who gets Guru and Krishna, he should be considered most fortunate. Because why? He can go back home, back to Godhead. So birth into this material existence is nothing wonderful. There's nothing wonderful about being born, even as Brahma. Even if you're born as Brahma, that indicates that you're independent from the Lord. To some degree, he's the most pious living entity, Brahma. But what he's doing in this material world, he doesn't have material desire. So birth into this material world is nothing wonderful. That's why Vaishnavas don't generally celebrate their birthdays. Or if they do, they celebrate it by performing austerity and penance and sacrifice, giving and charity, etc. There's nothing wonderful about this birth. What is wonderful is second birth. That is wonderful. That you can actually celebrate. If you want to celebrate your birthday, you celebrate the birth into Krishna consciousness. Initiation into Krishna consciousness. That is something wonderful. So the four Kumaras of Vasudeva Parayana, they don't want to participate in that type of birth, creating progeny, facilitating the living entity's sense gratification. They want to facilitate the living entity's liberation. So therefore, they've made this refusal. Well, we want to serve you, Father. We want to serve you in your service of liberation. You've asked us two things. You've asked us to take care of the religious principles for liberation, ultimate liberation back home, back to Godhead. And simultaneously, you've requested that we engage in progeny. This is incompatible. We don't want to do, we can't do both. It's not possible. Like a devotee cannot advance in Krishna consciousness if he's engaged in sense gratification. It's not possible. So therefore, we will follow your superior instruction. Knowing your actual heart as a devotee yourself, we will follow that instruction. So that they will participate. They won't participate in the ignorance. They'll participate in the knowledge aspect. So, in essence, they've given up one chance, a chance of creating one family for another family. Just like Prabhupada said, I gave up one family for a larger family. Prabhupada had his wife, he had his children and everything. But he renounced that family for a greater family. And Prabhupada said, now he said, you are all my sons and daughters. So the Vaishnava will give up one service only to take up a higher service. That's the standard of devotional service for a devotee. A devotee never gives up one service because he's not successful at it and just takes something which is easier. That's not our process. Our process is Ananda Buddhi Bhavanam. Ananda Buddhi Bhavanam means the Krishna consciousness is blissful when it's expanded. When we're increasing our devotional service, that's when we're happy. We're not happy when we're decreasing. We always want to increase, make the effort to increase in quality and quantity. So of course it could have been a service to them to, you know, do the progeny. But they consider the superior service to liberate the living entity. So they've given up the opportunity for one service to take a higher service. So in the same way, we should never give up a service in Krishna consciousness. And love would mean to step forward in devotional service, to take a higher service. You shouldn't give up one to take the inferior. So ultimately, they have not displeased their father because they're devotees of the Lord. And the refusal is not wrong because they have his interest at heart. But it is not in our spiritual master's interest, nor is it in our interest to disobey our spiritual master. There's a difference. They're Vasudeva Parayana, they're an escapee of pastime, and there's many meanings to be understood in their refusal to obey their father. But it's not in our interest, and it's not in our spiritual master's interest in any way to disobey his instructions. We must serve our spiritual master's interest by carefully obeying his instructions. Actually, Tanaka Pandit says there's four types of students. One refuses the instruction of the spiritual master. He's considered to be like the stool. One carries out the instruction begrudgingly. All right, I'll do it. Okay, no, geez. The second class, he accepts the instruction and carries it out very willingly. But then what's first class? If second class is that one gets the instruction and carries it out willingly, then what could be first class? Well, the Tanaka Pandit says first class, if we call up a quote, first class is that he anticipates the instruction of the spiritual master. He even carries it out without being asked. In other words, he knows, he hears from his spiritual master in the general philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He reads the Prabhupada's book. There's no contradiction in Prabhupada's instruction. There appears to be a contradiction in this pastime where Brahma is asking them to create and liberate at the same time. It may appear like that, but there's no contradiction in anything that Prabhupada has told us. Of course, there is one contradiction. He said all the boys should stay brahmachari and all the girls should get married. But this is the contradiction in our philosophy. Anyway, that's not a real thing. We know how to settle that. Our contradictions are resolved in Krishna consciousness. But there's no contradiction. Everything is very clear in the Prabhupada's book. There's no need to interpret. One simply has to follow the instructions actually as they're given. So actually this is first-class disciple. First-class disciple anticipates the instructions of the spiritual master and carries it out without even being asked. Just like Prabhupada has given us an indication, what will please him? What will please him is that he spreads Krishna consciousness all around the world. What will please him is that we become good devotees. But what will ultimately please Srila Prabhupada, not that we become good devotees, we sit in the temple and ring the bells all day. Ding dong, like in Gaudiya Math. They're ringing the bells all day. Okay, we become devotees. Now what is our business? Our business is to deliver others. Prabhupada said, you have become Krishna conscious, now your service is to deliver others. Now, one can sit in the temple and just, you know, think about that, or one can actually do it. One can anticipate the instruction of the spiritual master and carrying it out without even being asked. Of course, the order is always there. But not that we have to be asked every day, please, for your service, please, preach. One who has life, he will preach. Real life is Krishna consciousness. This material world is not life. One who is in the bodily concept of life, identifying with his body, he will not have the energy to preach Krishna consciousness. The one who knows what is actual life, following the instructions of the spiritual master, pleasing the spiritual master, that devotee will exhibit the symptoms of life. There's different classes of devotees, everyone's evolving. But the first class devotee, he's exhibiting symptoms of life. And what is the symptom of life that he's exhibiting? That he's actively engaged in devotional service. He's actively engaged in the missionary activities of Krishna consciousness. This is, after all, a missionary movement. Everything is meant to facilitate the liberation of the conditioned souls from material existence. Everything. That is why we're here. We're not here in Krishna consciousness to have a comfortable life. If someone comes to Krishna consciousness thinking he'll live a comfortable life, they'll have another thing coming. It's difficult work liberating all these fools and rascals from material existence. But it's a burden of love. And our pleasure is seeing Prabhupada pleased by this Krishna consciousness movement expanding. So if we have life, the symptoms of life will be there, just like the baby's growing in the womb because he's getting nourishment from the umbilical cord of his mother. The life is there, nourishment is coming. Baby's growing. So what will be a sign that we've grown up in Krishna consciousness? That we're not always asking, give me from the guru, but we're saying, take this service and stop asking, you know, please help me control my mind, please help me control my senses, please, you know, give me this, please, make it easier, please. No. We'll say, what can I do for you? That's what it means to mature in Krishna consciousness. Of course, in the baby, you can always take from the mother. That's to be understood. From the beginning, we're getting that nourishment. But the fine line, when we grow up, is that we begin to offer service to the spiritual master. Unconditional, unreserved service to the spiritual master. That is the stage that we want to come at in devotional service. Just like the perverted reflection of that is John F. Kennedy's famous statement, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. The same principle. Don't ask. At some stage, stop asking what your guru can do for you, and ask what you can do for your guru. That is advanced. Of course, the guru tolerates in the beginning, because it's like a child. When a child's growing up, it's slobbering, it's doing this and that, but the mother has to take care of it. All right, then they change the diapers, this is crying, all right, they're going to be all right, you know, give them the food. But, you know, if the child continues doing that at 25 years of age, you know, or 30 years of age, please, you know, change my diaper, my son, you know, please feed me, you know, please blow my nose. That's not very good. So there's a stage. We have to evolve in Krishna consciousness. Now, but practically following the instructions of the spiritual master, we're going to get the nourishment. And that nourishment will give us life. And the symptoms of life that one becomes a preacher. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said. He who has life, he will preach. The one who is matured, who has grown up in Krishna consciousness, he'll take it upon himself to assist the spiritual master in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. Any spiritual master, his worth is there and his desire to see Krishna consciousness spread. That was Prabhupada's most intense desire. Prabhupada is a resident of Vrindavan. So one may be looking, where are the symptoms of a resident of Vrindavan? Where are the symptoms of such a Mahabhagavata? So those symptoms were very manifest. Of course, sometimes we saw Prabhupada cry tears of ecstasy and he shivered and so forth. We saw that. But Prabhupada manifested for us his most intense desire. And what was that? To see Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. He preached. Up to the last moment, he was preaching on his deathbed. So this is a symptom of an advanced soul. This is a symptom of a great devotee. Other symptoms may be there, but anyway, as far as we understand, and as far as Prabhupada exhibited, what were the activities of Srila Prabhupada? A liberated soul, a resident of Vrindavan, he traveled all over the world, exhibiting the symptoms of life, the preacher of Krishna consciousness. So we're meant to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps, like that. And if we have that understanding, then we'll also assist, we'll become first-class students. Anticipate the instruction and carry it without being even asked. So that is Prabhupada's ultimate interest. That was the interest ultimately of Bhavana. That's why the four Kumaras took that instruction. So we don't have to pick and choose. It's very clear for us. That's the point. They had to make a decision. That was time. That was a special incident. But that is not the case for us. Neither will it ever be the case for us. It's always very clear what will please our Guru Parampara, what will please Lord Krishna. It's very clear. Prabhupada has made it very clear. There's no doubt. There's no need to interpret on this point what will please him. Prabhupada said, if you want to please me, distribute my book. So this upcoming book marathon will give us a chance to serve his interest and his desire, Srila Prabhupada. And the four Kumaras were Vasudeva Parayana, liberated souls, concerned with the welfare of all living entities, the spiritual welfare. So Srila Prabhupada is also Vasudeva Parayana. He's concerned with the welfare. So if we want to please him, then we can distribute his books. That's why everyone is looking forward to this book distribution. They're not hesitating, thinking, this is the chance to get the mercy of a great soul like Srila Prabhupada. So don't let the mercy just pass by. You know, just see you walk by. Yes, that was very nice, you know. You want to get the mercy, then you have to partake of it, drink deep of the nectar of this instruction of Srila Prabhupada. So that's why His Holiness Prabhupada Maharaj has instructed SGBC, Governing Board Commission members, he's instructed that we increase the book distribution in this yatra. So he's asked that we do this book distribution marathon. So we should try to fulfill the order of Maharaj and the desire of Srila Prabhupada by all participating. And we will see the greatness of Prabhupada manifest. Now Prabhupada, the reason is who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. A Vaishnav dies to live, and while living tries to spread the holy name around. So generally, a person's reputation goes up only to the point of his departure. Srila Prabhupada will live on forever if people have the opportunity to associate with him through these transcendental literatures, through these books. So actually, in effect, we're giving people Srila Prabhupada by giving them these books. And what could be a greater gift than that? If you want to give someone a nice gift, what could be a nicer gift in this entire three worlds than getting a book by Srila Prabhupada, which will enlighten them how to get out of this miserable place and go back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, Rupa Goswami describes this is the highest welfare work, highest charity work, distributing Krishna consciousness. It's the most elevated work. And it puts us in direct contact with Krishna's pure devotees. So we always talk about putting Prabhupada in the center and getting Prabhupada's association. But here's the way to do it. Fulfill his instructions. And of his many instructions, one that is most dear to him is that we distribute Krishna consciousness to fallen conditioned souls. And the best way to do that is transcendental book distribution. Ki Jai. So, as Lord Brahma can create an entire universe, and if Vasudeva Parayana, he can deliver an entire universe. So the four Kumaras are not interested in the creative, they're interested in the liberating. So therefore, their act is considered right. So in the same way, if Lord Brahma can create an entire universe, Srila Prabhupada can actually deliver an entire universe if we facilitate him through this transcendental book distribution. Gantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Sai Gaur Premananda. So are there any questions?
I have difficulty understanding the example of the four Kumaras, which says that this instance is not an ordinary pastime. They're seeking Lord Brahma and also they are showing path of Krishna consciousness, but it seems that in the scriptures, there's always some pastime which are always special pastimes that we cannot communicate. And in the same way, we should need to read the scriptures in order to follow an example. So how do we know what is following and what is misleading?
By Guru. There's Bhagavad and there's Prasanna Bhagavad. And although both of them are capable of liberating us, we understand that we actually, in order to be liberated by the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to hear that philosophy from a realized soul. Otherwise, we may not be able to understand the subtle meanings. There's many apparent meanings in the Shastra, but there may be other meanings which may not be so apparent to us at this stage of our devotional service. So we have to hear about it from a devotee, and by hearing about it we can understand, we can appreciate. So both are needed, Bhagavad and Person Bhagavad. In the Person Bhagavad, he illuminates the actual meaning. The meaning's there. It's not meant to be a hidden meaning, but because, we're in the stage we were at, it appears to be a hidden meaning. So when the devotee speaks, it becomes revealed. We give an example the other day, like when we were children, they used to be those little cards you could buy in a store, and there was nothing there, but as soon as you put the pencil on it, you rub the pencil on it, then you can see the picture. You ever have that? So you can see the picture. So the Bhagavatam's there. Here it is. Take it off the shelf without Prabhupada's purport. What are you going to understand? Very little. But when you read the purport, it becomes very clear. So in the same way, it's not that the Bhagavatam is trying to, the Bhagavatam is hiding these points, and then No, they're finer points, but they're meant to be understood from someone who's realized them, from a devotee.
The other question is, the Kumaras, Lord Brahma gave them these four principles of knowledge, and then he also gave them instructions to the progeny, and then this was the higher instruction. and you explain that there was the purpose of liberating the conditioned souls, but at that stage, and in that stage of the Bhagavatam, the Sukumar is still under the compulsion of the personality. So is it actually a definition of liberating the conditioned souls?
Well, see, they're not, yes, because, you know, in other words, he's entrusted to them the principles of, he's entrusted to them these various principles of yoga, mysticism, etc. And they're in charge of a particular sampradaya. And it wasn't that they were not, it wasn't that they were adverse to Krishna consciousness. They're not adverse to it, they're not Mayavadis. They're impersonalists. Impersonalist means one who has a bona fide realization of the Lord as in his Brahman teacher. But it's not that they're adverse to Krishna, so, you know, they're entrusted with this, with the understanding that in the future they'll take up that activity.
This Kumar Sampradaya was not created from that very stage. Is that when this Sampradaya was started being created? Or did it start, when the Maka Sampradaya started at the beginning of time?
It later on became known as the Nimbarka Sampradaya. But previously to that, yeah, they've been representatives from the very beginning. It was all these great sages became great devotees, but without devotional service to the personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve success in any activity of spiritual value. So he entrusted them with these responsibilities, and it says later they became. All these great sages became great devotees. But later on, they were able to properly carry out the responsibilities as representatives of the Supreme Lord when they became perfected. Just like you see that in Prabhupada's life, of course, Prabhupada was perfected.